Well, good morning, everyone. I'm going to tell you right now, I am so excited to be here. I'm a little bit nervous, but I am more so excited. And if you do not know who I am, my name is Michael Fukuyama, and I'm the youth coordinator here at Mission Valley. And if you're new here, I want to welcome you. And for those who are watching the live stream, I want to welcome you as well. I need to remember to look at the camera because I might forget. But today we're going to be talking about the sermon, which is titled, God Does Not Forget Us. And the message is going to be around John chapter 5, verses 1 through 15. And when I was thinking about what to come up with, I really thought to myself, what is something that might sound cliche, that might seem obvious, but also at the same time so true? And I think this title of God Does Not Forget Us is perfect, because this past year of COVID, right, I think a lot of us were struggling. I think a lot of us had to endure life alone. Some of us, we were not able to see our family members, our friends in person. Yeah, we were able to do it over Zoom, or we could have done it over Google Hangouts or FaceTime, but we knew deep down that we were craving that in-person interaction, right? And I know for myself, I was struggling. I was cooped up in my room. I was feeling lonely, and I was like, man, God, like, why do I have to go through this? Did you forget about me? Like, why is it that all of us, not just the United States, but all these populations of people, different countries, different continents, we're all experiencing the same things? Did you abandon us when we needed you the most? But no, he did not. And the three points that I want to talk about that really support my title or my message is that God does not forget about us because he has the knowledge. God does not forget about us because he has compassion toward us. And God does not forget about us because he shows his power to us to change our lives. So let's get started. In John chapter 5, verses 1 through 5, it says, sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five colored colonnades. Here, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. The one who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. Okay, so basically, verses 1 through 5 are really here to set up the environment. It's the context for what's to come. And you notice that here's a pool, right? It's not like a summer pool where, you know, you're swimming with your friends, you're having hamburgers, and you're having hot dogs. No, this is a pool full of people who are paralyzed, who are blind, who are sick, okay? And if you look at the word Bethesda, it can be translated to disgraceful or shameful. So basically, this is a pool full of people who are forgotten by society. These are outcasts. These are people who are rebuked, who are made fun of, who are mocked because of their disabilities. Right? And I love this because this is where Jesus is always at. Jesus is never in the kingdoms having parties, again, eating good. No, this is where Jesus' ministry lies, okay? And if you notice, there's something missing in verses 1 through 5. I don't know if you caught it, but there's actually no verse 4. And the reason why there is no verse 4 is because it cannot be found in the oldest manuscripts or text in the Bible. And the only place you can see verse 4 is in the King James Version. And if you are curious about what it says, I have it here for you. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first after the troubling of the water stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. So now, verse 4 gives us context as to why there are people there at the pool, right? It's not like these people are trying to just stay cool for the summer, but they can't. But it's because they have heard that there was a possible chance that they could be saved by an angel who was in the pool. Now, we do not know if this is real or not. It could be true. It could be 100% factual. Or it could be a myth. It might not exist at all. But these people were so desperate for help because no one was there to help them. Again, these were the forgotten people. These are the people who no one cared about and were so desperate that they would do anything to be healed. And in this first five verses, we also have our main character, who is an invalid who has been paralyzed for 38 years. Now, 38 years is a long time. I'm not even close to 38, and I felt like I've lived a decent amount of life, right? COVID alone made me feel so old. I'm sorry. But you can imagine, man, what is this guy doing here for 38 years? No one was willing to help him, right? So then we move on to verses 6 through 9. And verses 6 through 9 are where the bulk of this passage is going to come from, where Jesus' knowledge, his compassion, and his power will really shine in these next couple of verses. So it says, when Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I am trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat, and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. And I chose not to finish verse 9. I chose to do half of it because I want to mention the later part of verse 9 later. So here we have knowledge, okay? When you meet someone for the first time, do you assume you know everything about their life, or do you have an introduction, right? I'm like, "Nathan, nice to meet you." And Nathan would tell me, "Oh, Michael, nice to meet you." Then we talk. What are you into? Nathan is into guitars. I'm into making fish tanks, right? And this is how a conversation is started. You get to know someone. You learn their backstory. But notice here how Jesus, the first thing that is said is that Jesus saw him and learned what he's been going through. The man has yet to speak to Jesus, but Jesus already knew what he was going through. And that's crazy because, again, there's no way I would know Nathan's life without actually holding an introduction conversation and later developing that friendship. But Jesus knew exactly what he was going through. And so then you get the man's response, right? You get what the man is going through because the paralyzed man is telling him, "Jesus, I have been here for 38 years, but no one has been here to help me." And again, this should be flipped, right? Technically speaking, verse 7 should be first because it's the context for Jesus to ask him, "Oh, okay, I understand you've been here. Do you want to get well?" But Jesus is showing us right now, that does not matter. You do not need to tell me what's going on in your life because I already know. Right, but in the same way, but what does that mean for us? I know for me growing up, I'm an only child. I have no siblings. I have dogs now, which is great. But it was hard growing up as a kid. Why? Because I didn't have siblings to go to. So when I would go through obstacles, when I would go through hardships, I did truly feel alone. And I felt like no one knew what I was going through. Because all my friends had siblings. And it was always the same for them. "Oh, well, when something is going wrong, I can go to my sister or brother." Right, but for me, all I did was go to my room and just coop up and stay in my room because I felt like I could not go to anyone. And now, obviously, I was young. I didn't have a cell phone in elementary school or middle school, so I did not know how to deal with that. But as I grew older and my relationship with Jesus got better, I realized what that relationship meant. Because I felt abandoned when I was young because I had no one to go to, that was a lie. Because Jesus was there every single step of the way. And so again, as my relationship got better with Jesus, I understood that I was never once forgotten. That I no longer had to feel alone because Jesus knew. Jesus was the one person who knew exactly what I was going through. And that to me was the greatest thing ever. I love my dogs, but they don't come close to Jesus, right? And this is why sometimes we do feel alone in these moments, because we truly feel like no one knows what we're going through. We feel like what we go through is not relatable whatsoever. And I get that. I live that. But at the same time, Jesus is knocking at the door and saying, "Michael, let me in right now. I am here and I have not forgotten about you." Psalm chapter 139, verses 2 through 4 say, "You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely." So what does that mean? Well, what it means is that you cannot hide from God. That might be scary because God may know your deepest, darkest secrets, but you cannot run or hide from God. God and Jesus will literally know what you're thinking. They know what you're thinking, what you're not thinking, what you're going to say or what you're not going to say, what actions you do or do not commit. Jesus knows it all. So there's no reason to hide from Jesus. There's no reason to feel like Jesus has forgotten us because he knows what we go through. He knows us fully. But if you think that's enough, if you don't think that Jesus not knowing us is enough, well, guess what? Jesus predicted his own death and resurrection. In Matthew chapter 20, verses 17 through 19, it says, "Now Jesus was going up to Jerusalem. On the way, he took the 12, which are the disciples, aside and said to them, 'We are going to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles to be mocked and flogged and crucified. On the third day, he will be raised to life.'" So now, there's really no excuse to say that Jesus does not forget about me, because he doesn't. There's no reason that Jesus would forget about you because he knows everything we're going through, right? Jesus knows when you're going through your lowest points in your life. He knows when you're going through your highs. He sees that. He understands that. And this is what he wanted to get across. He knew what the man was going through. And us as the audience, he wanted to tell us that I know exactly what you're going through and you don't have to say a thing. So now we're going to compassion, right? Because what's knowledge if you don't do anything about it? Now, when we know that Jesus is in town, he's in Jerusalem, right? He's at this pool. And I'm going to tell you right now, this was not a mistake. This goes back to knowledge. Jesus knew exactly what he was doing. There was no poster that said, "Come to this pool full of invalids." Jesus did not read that. Jesus did not overhear a conversation saying, "Oh, by the way, did you see those people? No, Jesus did not hear or overhear that conversation. Jesus knew exactly what he was going to do, just like he knew exactly what he was going to do when he went to Samaria to see the woman at the well. And now I'm going to read verses 6 through 8. "When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, 'Do you want to get well?' 'Sir,' the invalid replied, 'I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I am trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me.' Then Jesus said to him, 'Get up, pick up your mat, and walk.'" Now notice how the man responds, right? He doesn't respond when Jesus asks him, "Do you want to get well?" He doesn't say, "Yes, God," or "Yes, Jesus, please heal me. Please, I have been here for so long." That is not his first response. Whereas I have knee problems, so when I play basketball, it hurts. If Jesus came down to me right now and asked, "Michael, do you want to be healed?" "Yes, I want to be able to run without feeling tired after 5 minutes. Yes, heal me, Jesus," right? That is my response, and that would be a normal response for people who know Christ, right? Because we know what Jesus does. But yet, how come this man did not respond with a resounding yes? How come he wasn't excited? But it's because he had no idea who Jesus was, right? This man had no idea that Jesus was talking to him, and that's why he responded in the way that he did. But whereas if he knew it was Jesus, he would have said yes, right? So now we have someone who doesn't believe in Jesus, who doesn't even know that they're talking to Jesus. So what's next? Is Jesus just going to drop this guy because he doesn't know him or knows that he's talking to him? No. This is where compassion comes in. Jesus knows that this man is not a Christ believer. Jesus knows that this man has no faith whatsoever. But what does Jesus do? Does Jesus drop him and tell him, "Oh, well, you don't believe in Christ, so I'm going to go to people who do"? No. He does not. He tells the man, "Get up, pick up your mat, and walk." And then he's healed, right? So then what does this mean for us, right? Jesus is essentially giving this man a gift of compassion. He's showing him, okay, like, this is what it looks like to be healed, right? But not just physically, but wholly, okay? But then what are we supposed to do with that? Jesus is going out of his way to heal a non-Christian. So if that translates to our actual life, That means we need to be doing ministry more. We need to be doing it more outside of the church than inside. Why? Because the people outside, the non-believers, the non-Christ believers, those are the people. That's our ministry, right? Because how can a church grow if you have the same people in the church doing the same things but not going out and evangelizing? Where do you get people, right? Now it's just become a building full of Christ followers, but choosing not to go out there to show compassion, to not spread the gospel. And so this is the point Jesus is trying to come across. It does not matter what you believe. It does not matter what sin you've committed. It does not matter what you may do in the future. What matters most is that we are going out there and still loving on those communities, that we are inviting them to church and letting them know that it does not matter what you do, that I still have compassion toward you, okay? Now we go to Matthew chapter 20, verse 34, and it says, Jesus had compassion on them and touched their eyes. Immediately they received their sight and followed him. Now again, this is a verse demonstrating that Jesus is showing compassion toward two blind men. And for context, this is when Jesus is leaving Jericho and he sees two blind men out on the sidewalk. And these two blind men are calling out for Jesus, 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 heal me, please, I cannot see. But do you notice they do know that Jesus is coming by, and that's why they have that response. But here comes people rebuking them, telling them to be quiet. They're saying, oh, ignore them, they're being too loud, like quiet down, like you're making it, you're disrupting things. But Jesus is like, no, I don't care if you don't believe in me, I don't care if you're sick. Let me go up to you and touch your eyes and heal you. And do you notice at the end of this verse, it says, they received their sight and followed him. Ah, another example of two people not believing in Christ before Jesus had touched them, right? And this was Jesus' ministry. His ministry was to touch those who do not believe them, who were sick. And this is his way of showing compassion, because he knew that the only way for these people to be fully healed, right, not just physically, but through their holiness and through the faith, that these acts needed to be demonstrated, that these acts needed to be done for these people. And then guess what? Again, they followed him. So you can see that if we at least attempt to go out there and evangelize, to spread the gospel, what do you think may happen? Yes, you might get some no's, but I'm sure you might get some yeses as well. Because that is our opportunity there, to really show compassion toward those who do not believe. Now I'm going to transition into my third point of power. And so in John chapter 15, verses 8 through 9, it says, then Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat and walk. At once the man was cured, he picked up his mat and walked. Okay, so now Jesus is demonstrating, I have the knowledge what you're going through. I have the compassion to show you that I know what you're going through, that I'm here for you. But now he has the power to change your life, to remind you that I have not forgotten about you. Now, in this verse, it does not say Jesus had compassion on them and touched their eyes. 50 years later, they received their sight and followed him. It says immediately they Wrong verse. It says, at once the man was cured, he picked up his mat and walked. It does not say, 50 years later, the man was cured, and then he picked up his mat and walked. So what this is showing is that Jesus' power is on full display. The effectiveness, the immediacy of his power is there. It's there because Jesus understands that this man has been suffering enough. Here I am. So he acts at once, and boom, this man probably had no idea what was going to happen, gets up, walks with his mat, and he's like, wow, this is new. I haven't done this in a long time. But this is what Jesus' power shows us, is that it's effective. It works. It's not flawed. It's not fake, but it's real. In John chapter 4, verses 50 through 30, it says, go, Jesus replied, your son will live. The man took Jesus at his word and departed. While he was still on the way, his servants met him with the news that his boy was living. When he inquired as to the time when his son got better, they said to him, yesterday at 1 in the afternoon, the fever left him. Then the father realized that this was the exact time at which Jesus had said to him, "Your son will live." So he and his whole household believed. Again, for context, an official has a sick son. Basically on the brink of death, he's very sick. And he's desperate, so he goes to Jesus. He's like, "Jesus, please heal my son." And this is where Jesus shows compassion. He's like, okay, you know, he doesn't have to do this. It's probably not on his agenda to do this, but he does it anyways. He shows the compassion. And this is where power comes in. Jesus is miles away from the sun, right? Jesus is probably like from, let's just say Mission Valley is the center point, and then Jesus is out in, you know, Gardena or Torrance, you know? And this shows that Jesus' power has no limits. You can't cap Jesus' power on distance, right? And it amazes me because Jesus' power, again, is in full effect, right? No matter how far Jesus is away from us, he's going to show his light. He's going to show his power, and he's going to change our lives regardless of what stage of faith we are at. And again, notice at the end of this verse where it says, "So he and his household believed." Another example of a non-believer being saved, not through the physical health, but actually through their faith. Because they're like, "Oh, wow, this is the real deal. I need to believe now." So again, Jesus does have the power to change our lives, right? He does not forget about us. Never once has he abandoned us. And so again, the power that Jesus demonstrates is for us to realize our lives can be changed, whether we're in the best part of our life or even the lowest part of our life. Now moving on to the full verse 9, it says, "At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. The day on which this took place was the Sabbath." Kind of abrupt. You have all this momentum going into the verse, right? Like, wow, Jesus is great. Jesus is showing his knowledge, his compassion, his power. And then you have John, who wrote this chapter, talking about it's the Sabbath. Oh no, Michael, are you telling me that I need to work on the Sabbath? Are you telling me I need to pick up my, or I need to make my bed sheets and clean my sheets on the Sabbath? No. But I want you to realize that, yes, it is the Sabbath, but what is Jesus doing here? Because we know that the Sabbath, that it was unlawful to work, that you were not supposed to work or commit any sort of activities on the Sabbath. It was for rest. But that was a man-made law. Jesus never said that. God never said that. So then here it comes again. Jesus is telling this man to walk, to pick up his mat and go. And the reason why the Sabbath is important is because it's a sign that Jesus does not care that it's the Sabbath. Jesus is telling him, "I don't care that it's the Sabbath. You have now the ability to walk and pick up your mat." This is a celebration, right? Again, this person, this paralyzed man who is now functional, is able to do this. This is something he could not do for 38 years. And that is why the Sabbath here is in place, so that is a reminder that this man is celebrating something he could not do, that he does not care that you are not supposed to work, right? He does not care because, again, this is something he could not do for 38 years. So now moving on to verses 10 through 13. It says, "And so the Jewish leader said to the man who had been healed, 'It is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat.' But he replied, 'The man who made me well said to me, pick up your mat and walk.' So they asked him, 'Who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk?' The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there." Jesus, where did you go? Why did you just heal the man? Did you actually forget about what was supposed to come? His faith, his holiness. Jesus, why did you disappear? And this happens a lot in movies or TV shows, right? When a pedestrian is saved by someone, and sometimes they're saved by a superhero, they catch their breath and they try to turn around to thank them, but they're not there. So this is what Jesus is doing. Jesus saves him, vanishes. But how come Jesus left, right? Did Jesus just leave and forget about his faith? Did Jesus leave because of his holiness, because he wasn't a non-believer yet? No. In verses 14 through 15, and this is where we're going to get the answer, it says, "Later Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, 'See, you are well again. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you.' The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who made him well." Oh, Jesus, yes, thank you for coming back. I was a little bit scared there. Jesus came back. And again, guess who found them? It wasn't the man who found Jesus. It was Jesus who found the man at the temple. Jesus intentionally sought out the man and told him to stop sinning, right? Jesus wanted to make sure that he knew that, okay, I've shown you my knowledge over you. I knew exactly what you've been going through. Here's my compassion. I understand what you're going through. I know it hurts. And now then Jesus has demonstrated the power, right? The power to change his life. But then what then? What do you do with those three things? And Jesus says to stop sinning. Well, we know that sin is inevitable. We know that we are not perfect. We know that we are going to sin, whether we like it or not. That's just the way it is. So why is Jesus telling this man to stop sinning? Because the ultimate sin that you can commit is not believing in Jesus Christ. Because if you don't believe in Jesus Christ, none of this matters. You can do whatever you want, but in the end, none of it matters. Whatever you're promised as a Christian or a Christ follower, whatever promises that God gives us, that doesn't matter if you don't believe. So this is what he's trying to tell the paralyzed man. He's telling him to stop sinning, as in to believe in my power, to believe that there's more for you than just a perfect physical body that you can now walk in, but a perfect spiritual body, right? That you can invest in others, that you can go out there and tell others that Jesus is alive, that God is alive and working. That is the sin that Jesus wants this man to avoid. And I want to go back really quickly to, I think, verses 1 through 5, where it says, verse 6, where Jesus is asking him, "Do you want to get well?" Of course the man wants to get well. Like, he has been there for 38 years. And you might be thinking, well, Jesus already knew that he was suffering. Why would Jesus ask, "Do you want to get well?" But he's not asking him, "Do you want to get well for physical purposes?" It's for spiritual. Do you want to get well with God? Do you want to be able to have that relationship with God? Because Jesus knows, again, that the best thing that could happen to you is having that relationship with God. And that is when we are well. In closing, I want us to remember this. Does Jesus forget us? Nope, he does not. And I want you to think about it like this. Maybe it's actually us that forget about Jesus. Because when we're in our low points, sometimes Jesus is not on the forefront of our minds, right? When we are suffering, when we are struggling, we forget about Jesus because there's so much happening in our lives. And then when it comes down to it, we're like, "Jesus, why is this happening to me? Have you forgotten about me?" But the answer to that is no, right? Because if we have a solid relationship with Christ, if we have that everyday relationship with Christ where we are praying, we're reading scripture, we're doing what God wants, there will never be a moment where you doubt that God has not forgotten about you, right? There is no reason to feel like God has forgotten about you if you understand your relationship with Jesus. Yes, there are times when we are struggling. Yes, we are suffering. But it is not an excuse to feel like we are abandoned, right? Because Jesus does not abandon us, right? Jesus does not leave us when we need him the most. No, he is walking side by side with us to make sure and lets us know that we are not forgotten, right? And we know that Jesus shows his knowledge. Jesus knows everyone in this room fully. We may not know each other fully, but Jesus does. Jesus has that knowledge. Jesus has the compassion. He hurts, right? Jesus is hurting when we hurt. We know that Jesus wept when he saw that Lazarus was dead. He is capable of showing compassion to those who are suffering. Right, even though Jesus is perfect, even though Jesus knows everything, he still chooses to freely love us, regardless of what stage of faith we are at. And lastly, Jesus has that power to really, really shake up our lives. He has that power to make us realize that this is what we're missing out. We are not missing out on a fully functional body, but we are missing out on a spiritual life with God, a spiritual relationship that we need with God. And so to wrap things up, does God forget about you? Nope, he does not, okay? And I want you to remember this. Jesus will never abandon you. Yes, this past year was tough. Yes, this past year was hard. We were alone. We only had text, FaceTime. We weren't able to see each other in person. But Jesus never once forgot about us. In fact, we were made better because of it. Jesus understood that we need to go through obstacles. We need to go through hardships to be better Christ believers. Okay, Jesus knew, again, he knew that if we never went through obstacles, then our faith would never grow. But you can argue that COVID was probably one of the biggest obstacles anyone has ever had to deal with. And because of it, we are better. Worship team, I'd like to call you guys up, and I would like to close us in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, I want to just close this time. And just a reminder, God, that you are so, so good. That even in times of pain and suffering, that you feel for us. That you show us, you know, your compassion. That we are reminded every day that there is not a single day that goes by that you are not there. That we are encouraged that we can live life knowing that whatever happens, we have Jesus, we have God by our side. That there's no reason to worry. There's no reason to feel like we are alone. That when we grow out of that, we realize that those were just lies. Lies that the devil, that Satan wants us to believe. Because he knows that when we are alone, that's when we are the weakest. But then Jesus is right here knocking on that door and telling us, Michael, I'm here. I'm right next to you. I have not forgotten about you. I have not abandoned you. I am still here. That Jesus, you show us how knowledgeable you are of us because we can't hide anything. That you show us how compassionate you are, that you feel, you empathize with us. And that lastly, God, you change our lives for the better. It is not us who find you, God. It is you who finds us in the midst of chaos or evil, obstacles, hardships. It is you who finds us and show us that you care. I just pray that God, when we leave this building, that we encourage that you do not forget about us, but also that we take what we learned today and we take that outside of these walls and we tell people that they are loved. That we let people know that they are not forgotten, just how Jesus did not forget about the paralyzed man. And just how Jesus did not forget about us. That our ministry lies on the outside of these walls. God, you are so good and you are so loving. I just pray that we live this out every single day. That we don't forget it. That it's engraved in our brain. That we know that you will never forget us, God. That you choose to freely love us. That it is not forceful, but you freely love us when you don't have to. And that should mean the world to us. That you freely give us these gifts, God. These miracles. These lessons, these teachings, these experiences. Because you know that this is what we need in order to grow our faith, God. And that we just need the eyes. That we need ourselves to see that. To open our eyes and to really see that you are working in our lives, God. That you are capable of doing anything. I just want to pray these things in your name. Amen.